It's the confluence where the news comes together on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. After a divorce or separation, children often move back and forth between their parents' homes. But amid the coronavirus pandemic, some parents with court-ordered custody exchanges have concerns about how to follow proper social distancing measures while keeping up those agreements. Susan Abramowitz is a managing attorney for family law at Neighborhood Legal Services. She's been working with clients who are dealing with this very issue. Susan, what are some of the concerns parents are bringing to you?
Well, Kevin, our families are under a lot of stress right now, as everyone is with the pandemic that's upon us. Oftentimes, our clients are seeing financial stresses. The kids are home. They already perhaps have a rocky relationship with their ex. So these are all, you know, things that are just adding to each other and causing additional pressures on the family. They worry about, you know, whether everyone is following the same rules, whether the pandemic's being taken seriously by the other parent. Are they keeping their children clean? Are they keeping them away from other people and avoiding social gatherings? Are they doing the schoolwork with the child now that the parents are homeschooling for the most part? So all these things have become issues that have arisen in our families that we work with.
So how has the custody process evolved during this pandemic? Have the courts stepped in to even alter existing agreements?
No, for the most part, they have not. If a custody arrangement was previously court ordered, that court order is to continue being followed, even in this pandemic situation. Custody exchanges are to occur, and they are excluded from the stay-at-home order. The courts have provided some guidance. Allegheny County has some frequently asked questions about custody on their website. And they make it very clear that, you know, you are to continue exchanging your children. If you exchanged your children in the past in a mall or inside a McDonald's, you now can do so in the parking lot since those places are no longer open.
So guidance, but can the courts really do anything to enforce social behaviors like physical distancing, making sure the guardian limits a child's chance of exposure?
Well, that's a very difficult question, and I sure wish they could, because that is a concern of a lot of our parents. Are the children being kept safe and away from others during this time, and is the other parent following the guidance of the CDC and the governor's directives? But realistically, can a court do that? I just don't know how that could happen. You know, the judge certainly isn't going to follow the parents around and make sure that they're following the guidance that's been provided, nor are the attorneys. So it's one person's word against the other person's word.
Susan, Neighborhood Legal Services works with clients here in Pittsburgh, as well as Beaver, Butler, Lawrence counties. What kinds of challenges are you seeing in the more rural parts of our area that maybe don't come up as often in the city?
Well, the more rural counties have been a little bit slower to adapt their court processes, if they have at all. You know, Allegheny County was the first among those four counties to enact its judicial emergency order, and has really been ahead of the pack as far as allowing advanced communication technology to take place in the PFA proceedings, as well as any sort of emergent proceedings that come up and require judicial attention. I'm not sure if the outlying counties have the technological resources to do that. So I think that that's part of why they have not adopted the same procedures that Allegheny County has.
So has that changed the way that you provide services in those counties?
In those counties, we've been trying to keep our staff as safe as possible, as well as our clients and all other witnesses. So we had asked for some accommodations to be made in certain situations and allow more remote hearings as opposed to appearing in person, reducing the risk of exposure to our staff as well as our clients and the other parties.
Are the courts, like the rest of us now, using options like phone and video conferencing?
Absolutely. In Allegheny County, we are all remote at this point. When clients appear for temporary PFA hearings, they appear in court, but the judge is via an iPad. And I know stringent controls are taking place to disinfect to keep people socially distanced, to limit the number of people in the area. I know in other counties I have heard where they're still proceeding with some in-person hearings that people are waiting in their car until the judge actually calls them and tells them they're ready for them. Witnesses who typically would have to appear in person are being allowed to appear by telephone. So, the courts are taking steps to try to keep people as safe as possible.
Pennsylvania's 5th Judicial District, which is Allegheny County, recently extended the judicial emergency declaration through May 8th. That does mean limited court time to get anything accomplished. What do those limitations mean for family courts? How has it impacted your clients and others with the custody arrangements?
Many people who had pending hearings now have to wait until some uncertain date in the future to get resolution of their cases. And I know it's being referred to as the pandemic echo because when the courts reopen, there's going to be many backlogs and delays to deal with. So what happens when the courts reopen? It's going to be a waterfall of effects, I believe.
Susan Abramowitz is a managing attorney at Neighborhood Legal Services. Susan, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much, Kevin.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Megan Harris. Bad information can thrive during times of uncertainty, and the coronavirus pandemic is certainly no exception. The problem is what happens when people believe and make choices based on those falsehoods. Joining us is investigative reporter Mike Weershagen, who's been writing about this topic from his home in Pittsburgh for Lancaster Online. So, Mike, what kinds of inaccurate information have you seen so far?
Well, there are a few different types. Some of it is just accidental misinformation. I mean, part of the problem is this is a very new virus, right? And so people will put information out there that is what they understand to the best of their knowledge, but it turns out that it just isn't true, that we learn more about the virus and that information changes. That's kind of the more benign type of misinformation that we're seeing. But then you have sort of more of an active attempt to spread disinformation, sort of like we saw in the 2016 election when the Russian government was attempting to swing the election towards then candidate Trump. You have some of these foreign actors that are attempting to sort of stoke social divisions and drive a wedge into our society. They're doing that for their own reasons, obviously. And, we've seen the Chinese agents, for instance. The New York Times has been reporting that Chinese agents have been sort of stoking these fears of a militarization or a declaration of martial law here in the United States. Now, that actually does make its way to places like Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh Department of Public Safety started getting calls a couple of weeks ago because somebody posted a photo on Twitter purporting to show the National Guard in downtown Pittsburgh. Now, if you took a close look at the photo, it was pretty clear pretty quickly that that wasn't Pittsburgh, but it didn't stop people from picking up the phone, calling reporters, and from reporters calling the Department of Public Safety saying, is the National Guard moving into downtown Pittsburgh? So that's sort of more of that nefarious disinformation that's out there.
So what makes our current predicament so different?
The problem isn't so much that the outbreak is creating a unique environment for this. It's the same sort of thing we've been seeing, but it has kind of amped everything up, right? People are scared. People are not sure what to believe. They feel a little out of control, right? So they're looking for something that'll keep them safe, something that they can do to protect themselves or to better prepare for what's coming or what is going on right now. And in that environment where we're all scrambling for information, it's a lot easier for people to grab onto the wrong thing.
You mentioned the Pittsburgh Public Safety Department. Are there other examples of how people are approaching, I guess, ways to feed this disinformation and misinformation with truth?
There are. And this is, this is not a new problem. And so there are people all over the place who are looking or trying to direct folks in the right direction. Right? The lieutenant governor of our state, John Fetterman, has gone out there and said to people, look, don't just react to whatever you hear. You have to check your sources. You have to see that this is coming from, say, the state health department or from some other sort of verified source of information.
So if we spot something iffy on social or our cousin tells us they're sure they saw something crazy out there, there's no time like the present to vet your sources and make sure it is actually true, even if that takes us all a little bit of extra time.
Well, it comes down sort of like the way we treat the the pandemic itself. A lot of this comes down to individual behaviors, individual choices. We have to do things that maybe make life a little harder on ourselves, but ultimately leave us in a much better place.
Mike Wershagen is an investigative reporter for The Caucus and LNP Media. Mike, thanks for making time.
Always a pleasure.
I'm Megan Harris.
It's The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. I'm Kevin Gavin. Since March 15th, nearly 1.6 million Pennsylvanians have filed for traditional unemployment compensation. Thousands more have applied for help under a new federal program for self-employed and contract workers. 90.5 WESA's Margaret J. Krause reports the unprecedented volume of applications may still not reflect the true number of people in need.
Melinda Reich worked as a prep cook at Jerome Bettis's Grill 36 on Pittsburgh's north side until coronavirus shut the restaurant down. Things were already tight. Her hours dropped at the end of football season, and baseball wouldn't start until April 1st. But Reich had prepared for that.
You have to set yourself up for it. You know what I mean? Like, you know you're going to be slow, so you have to put money away.
But to go weeks without working, Reich couldn't stay afloat. She applied for unemployment on March 15th, shortly before all non-essential businesses in PA shut down. The state denied her claim. Reich appealed and was told to refile. She wanted to discuss some details with the unemployment office, but she couldn't get in touch with anybody.
I do have a great deal of patience, but I just want an answer. Like, am I eligible for unemployment or not? Just tell me. So if not, then I have to figure out a plan B.
Pennsylvania's Office of Unemployment Compensation fielded between 50 and 90,000 claims per day in the early weeks of the crisis. They've hired hundreds to staff the phones. Chris Bream is a regional economist with the University of Pittsburgh. He says he's not in the habit of being a government apologist, but
Pennsylvania clearly deserves some credit for being able to take in so many folks when there are a bunch of states that either have not been able to, and in some cases haven't even wanted to.
Some people interviewed for this story had no problem applying and have received at least two checks, but it's really hard to get an accurate picture of who wants to apply and can't. Tweets, Facebook posts, and interviews suggest despite staffing increases and system improvements, many people simply can't reach the Office of Unemployment Compensation. Brian Bouch filed in mid-March, right after he lost his full-time job at Eddie Merlot's downtown. His account was marked inactive, and he still hasn't been able to resolve the issue.
I have gotten up at 8 o'clock every day. I have my cell phone on automatic redial, and I'm on my laptop trying to get on the chat, nonstop.
Calls to the main line are met with a busy signal. And then the call drops. The chat function gets overloaded and asks people to try again later. Bouch says it's really stressful.
There's nothing you can do. All you think about is paying bills and when you're going to get money and how long the money you do have is going to last.
It's unclear how long Pennsylvania's money will last. This year, the state had $1.6 billion for the Unemployment Compensation Benefit Payment Fund. Not every person who files an initial claim gets unemployment insurance. But if they did, and if they were awarded the state's maximum weekly benefit, the fund would already be $2 billion short. Auditor General Eugene DePasquale says he's not worried the state will run out of money to write unemployment checks.
It appears that there is a strong commitment from the federal government to making sure that that doesn't happen.
For now, DePasquale says the state just has to hire the people it needs to help Pennsylvanians get through the pandemic.
And then when the dust settles, we can then deal with the repercussions of that. But we've got to win the battle right now. And that part of that battle is hiring people to help process these claims.
Pennsylvania's Department of Labor and Industry, home to the Office of Unemployment Compensation, did not respond to repeated requests for comment about the solvency of the state's benefit fund. In an email, a spokesperson said, quote, "Our staff is currently focused on providing resources to employees and employers impacted by the COVID-19 mitigation efforts." States can take out interest-free loans from the federal government to keep benefits going. In 2009, spurred by the Great Recession, Pennsylvania borrowed nearly $2 billion to make unemployment payments and eventually ran up nearly $4 billion in debt. Margaret J. Krause, 90.5 WESA News.
It's The Confluence. I'm Kevin Gavin. The coronavirus pandemic is hitting the coal industry hard. Mines are closing and bankruptcies are piling up. For State Impact Pennsylvania, the Allegheny Front's Reed Frazier explains why.
Andrew Blumenfeld has been around the coal industry for over three decades. He's seen his fair number of bad times for the industry, But Blumenfeld, a coal industry analyst with the firm IHS Markit, says this downturn is as bad as he's ever seen.
It doesn't compare. We have seen some relatively severe downturns, but nothing this sudden and this severe.
Businesses have shuttered to slow the spread of the virus. As a result, electricity use is down. This has hurt coal in particular. Nationwide, coal production has dropped 35% to 40%, according to one analysis. This comes after several years of declines. 5 years ago, coal made up a third of the nation's electricity. This year, it's down around 16%.
We're seeing coal production numbers and power generation numbers from coal going back right now, and roughly the late 1960s to mid-1970s levels.
Around the country, coal mines are shutting down or slowing production, including several in Pennsylvania. CONSOL closed its Enlow Fork mine in Washington County, citing low demand. Just over the border in West Virginia, Longview Power Plant, the most efficient coal-fired power plant in the country, filed for bankruptcy. Experts say it was already a bad year for coal before the coronavirus hit.
Just about everything that can go wrong has gone wrong for the coal industry.
Matthew Preston is a coal analyst at Wood Mackenzie. He says even before the lockdown started, coal was losing market share to natural gas. A mild winter kept prices for natural gas low because people weren't using as much of it to heat their homes.
I mean, there's really a double whammy here. The very, very low gas prices are right off the bat, even before the lockdown started, had already really reduced the coal burn this year. And then on top of that, you have a reduction in overall demand.
In the Mid-Atlantic power grid, that demand fell by 8% to 9% in March. Right now, coal is the most expensive source of energy on the grid, so coal plants are the first to get turned off when demand goes down. As a result, coal is piling up at power plants, which are starting to run out of storage capacity. Joe Aldina is an analyst at S&P Global Platts.
These high stockpile levels are actually pushing the physical constraints of the coal-fired generation system.
With nowhere for mines to send their coal, that means layoffs for coal miners. Contora Energy laid off 46 miners at its Cumberland mine in Greene County. James Starcher, a coal miner at Cumberland, was not among those layoffs, but he says the 500 or so other miners who work there are worried for the future of their jobs.
Because now everyone is thinking, oh my goodness, will there be more? Could there be more?
Analysts say there could be more layoffs, bankruptcies, and shutdowns this year. And if coal-fired power plants decide to retire early, then the damage inflicted by the coronavirus on the industry could leave a permanent mark. Reed Frazier, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
And for today, that is The Confluence on 90.5 WESA. You can find more from this and past episodes of the show on our website at wesa.fm/confluence or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Thanks to our team, Helen Wigger, Tom Hurley, Joya Zenkovic, Kylie Kozinski, and Megan Harris. I'm Kevin Gavin. Please be safe, and I hope you have a good day of good news.